calendar this morning, Odyssey Medical Technologies versus Medtronic Incorporated. We will hear first from counsel for appellant. Would you please introduce yourself for the record before giving an oral argument? You'll have 15 minutes. Respondent's counsel will then have 15 minutes in reply, followed by another 5 minutes of rebuttal argument from appellant's counsel. You may proceed.
Thank you, Judge Larkin, and may it please the court. My name is Mark Bradford with Bassford Remley. I represent the appellant, Odyssey Medical Technologies. This court should reverse and reinstate Odyssey's amended complaint against Medtronic for three reasons. First, the district court strayed well beyond the notice pleading standard and instead subjected Odyssey's complaint to an evidence-based factual enhancement standard that the Supreme Court rejected in Walsh and again most recently in Halva. Second, the district court's finding that the contract does not require Medtronic to purchase any product and does not include a quantity term is contrary to the plain language of that contract. And third, the court erred in summarily finding on a Rule 12 posture that the predominant purpose of the contract was the sale of goods. I intend to focus my arguments on the first two points, because as will become clear, I hope during the discussion this morning, the contract satisfies the UCC irrespective of the predominant purpose. The court is very familiar with the governing notice pleading standard. A complaint should be dismissed under Rule 12 only if it appears to a certainty that no facts which could be introduced consistent with the pleading exist, which would support granting the relief demanded. The problem here is that the district court cited the governing standard, but didn't apply it. The most glaring example is the dismissal of count two, and there are others. But in count two, the court clearly applied a heightened pleading standard to hold that the count two doesn't state a claim upon which relief can be granted. And that's, of course, the count relating to the forecast provision. Odyssey clearly alleged a breach of paragraph 5.4. It clearly alleged in paragraph 26 that it was damaged by that breach. The court acknowledged those allegations, but said plaintiff has failed to provide any proof of damages resulting from the failure to provide a forecast. The court went on to say, and this is at appendix page 30, plaintiff's claim that it suffered lost profits and opportunities is too vague to prove damages under a breach of contract claim without additional evidence.
Mr. Bradford, if we were to agree with you that some of the statements or the reasoning went beyond consideration of the allegations in the complaint, is it absolutely necessary to remand or to reverse and remand, or can we simply confine our analysis to the complaint and analyze it in the proper way and then make a determination on the merits of the pleading?
So Judge Johnson, your standard of review is de novo. So you can take a look at the complaint and determine under the correct Rule 12 standard, whether it articulates a claim upon which relief can be granted. And in this case, it certainly does. And I'll get to the meat of what I understand to be Medtronic's defense to the complaint, which is that the contract does not require Medtronic to actually purchase any product, number one. And number two, that even if there was such a requirement to purchase product, the contract doesn't identify the quantity of product to be purchased. And to understand why the district court's analysis of that was wrong, there's several different provisions of the contract that must be read together. And this is not a very long contract, but it starts right on page one under the background section, which states that Medtronic, quote, wishes to purchase the products for use in its business. That's the whole point of this contract, is that Medtronic desired to actually purchase the products that Odyssey manufactured. We then go to section 5.4, which imposes obligations on Medtronic and actually begins with the words Medtronic shall. As this court knows, shall is a term of obligation, not of discretion. And one of the obligations in that paragraph is for Medtronic to provide each month firm purchase orders to Odyssey.
So, Mr. Bradford, let me stop you there. So the first clause of the sentence says Medtronic shall provide a rolling 6-month forecast for the following product families that lists three of them. That much of the sentence, I think, is clear to me. But then after the word screws, I'm unclear about the meaning of the following phrases. You know, with firm purchase orders for the first 6 months, with a new comma. I don't understand what that means. I'm wondering if that's a typo. With rolling forecast for the second 6 months, and then there's a second sentence which doesn't even appear to be a complete sentence. Can you kind of tell me what that entire paragraph means, breaking it down with its components?
I'll do the best I can, Judge Johnson. With all candor, that's probably a question better directed to Mr. Marshall, since his client drafted the contract. But I agree that the sentence that has with a new comma appears to be a typographical error, which isn't that surprising given that there are errors replete throughout this contract. As the district court noted, there are two section sixes. Most of the paragraphs appear to be misnumbered, at least at the end of the contract. But the sentence that you referred to in section 5.4 imposes, as I read it, two obligations on Medtronic. One is to provide a rolling 6-month forecast, and another, because it uses the word with, which is conjunctive. So in other words, you issue the rolling forecast and, along with the forecast, you issue firm purchase orders for the first 6 months. Then there's a separate sentence that goes on to talk about another forecast and a separate sentence that then says each month, a new month of firm orders to be released by Medtronic. Our position is that's an obligation to issue firm purchase orders. If Medtronic has an obligation to issue firm purchase orders, it can't be that they don't have an obligation to purchase anything. That would be completely contrary to the language of the contract. But number two, if there is ambiguity in the contract, as the court knows, that ambiguity can be fleshed out with extrinsic evidence, which, again, we're here on a Rule 12 posture. So if there's some ambiguity in the contract that Medtronic drafted, that needs to be fleshed out through witness testimony and other forms of traditional parole evidence. But it doesn't end there. Our position, obviously, is they have an obligation to purchase something. Then the second question, and what I understand to be Medtronic's core defense, is, well, if we have an obligation to purchase something, the contract doesn't tell us how much, and therefore it's illusory and cannot be enforced. We know from the contract that, at least with respect to one of the three product families, the contract does identify a minimum purchase amount. And that's in the note on addendum page 15 on the signature page of the contract. Couldn't be more clear. Minimum order quantity, 50 pieces per lot. So what we have here in paragraph 5.4 is you must issue a monthly purchase order every month. And the purchase order must include, as it relates to Crescents, a minimum order quantity of 50 pieces per lot. There's no suggestion that quantity term is somehow ambiguous. Then we get to the question of, well, what about the other two?
Mr. Bradford, can I stop you there on that note? So I will confess, or I will say that the first time I read that, I understood it to mean if one is ordering Crescents, you can't order 40 or 30. You must order at least 50, no fewer than 50. But I did not read that note. Again, on my first reading, did not, to me, strike me as saying that every month or every period or every something, the company must order at least 50.
So do you
disagree with my sort of initial take on it?
Well, there's my response is simply this, Your Honor. I don't disagree that the note itself does not include a purchase obligation. That's in paragraph 5.4. of the contract. So what 5.4 says is each month Medtronic shall issue firm purchase orders for the three product families. Okay. What the note tells us is that the content of that purchase order, at least as it relates to Crescents, shall be a minimum quantity of 50 pieces per lot. So I am reading the two clauses together, 5.4 and the note. I agree that the note standing on its own is not a monthly purchase obligation. Then the question becomes, why did the parties include a note specifically related to Crescents when there are three product families that Medtronic is required to purchase under this contract? Again, that cannot be answered in the vacuum of a Rule 12 posture. It very well could be, and I'm hypothesizing here because, of course, the standard is, can we introduce any facts consistent with the pleading to substantiate the claims in the complaint? If you'll notice, the attachment to the contract, which is the price list, has quantity sizes, priced quantity sizes for the other two product families, and I'm referring to addendum pages 17 through 19, for the UAS screw product family and the Crescent product family, the price per lot size is in 100 size units. It very well could be that the party said, let's have a separate note for Crescents because we acknowledge that at least for that product family, you can order fewer than 100, where for the others, the order lot size will be 100. We don't know that yet because there hasn't been discovery on that question. So what this contract means in paragraph 5.4, if there is ambiguity, that should be resolved on remand. The quantity terms, there are quantity terms in the contract. And of course, we have the additional layer that the district court applied an incorrect standard to this complaint. One last thing I did want to point out is, and it relates to the first argument I made, which is the improper standard. I just want to emphasize that in Halva, the Supreme Court confirmed that a complaint with a virtually identical allegation was sufficient to withstand a Rule 12 dismissal. In Halva, the plaintiff alleged that the government delayed producing documents to him under the Government Data Practices Act. And the defendant threw up its hands and said, how could you conceivably have been damaged by that? You haven't alleged in your complaint how you were damaged, just that you were damaged. We've done the same thing and then some. And the Supreme Court in Halva said, we do not require factual enhancement in this state. All you're required to do is identify a breach, which we've done, and identify that we were damaged by that breach, which we've done. The arguments that Medtronic makes can be vetted during discovery, presented on a full summary judgment record, and resolved on the merits at that time. But we're entitled to discovery in this case. Unless there's any further questions, I'll yield the balance of my time.
I don't see any questions. We'll now hear from counsel for respondent. Please introduce yourself for the record before you begin your argument. Mr. Marshall, you'll need to unmute.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is David Marshall with Frederickson and Byron. I represent Medtronic Inc. The parties here entered into a pricing agreement, not a purchase agreement. And a pricing agreement has a recognized use and purpose. And Medtronic cited in its brief below and in its brief in the appellate court, the Reesers, Carter, and Modern Systems decision, which deals specifically with pricing agreements. And those decisions set forth in research, for example, that a buyer is not required to purchase product where the agreement does not include a quantity term. Similarly in Carter, a pricing agreement provides contract terms for when an order is placed. Now, the only response that Odyssey has to those three cases is in a footnote on page 6 of their memorandum, where they specifically say, well, here, there's a quantity term. In other words, that's what they're relying upon. The court did exactly what it was supposed to do by interpreting the contract as a matter of law to determine whether the allegations in the complaint state a breach of contract claim.
Mr. Marshall, can I just clarify on that point that the title itself doesn't control, it's what the provisions would be within the contract. So for instance, in 5.4, the language, each month, a new month of firm orders to be released by Medtronic, language like that I understand apparently they're a term of art in the industry, but I assume you still got to look at the document. Or likewise, if a document was a purchase order, but it had all this other language, which sounded like a pricing agreement, the language would control, and that's what the court would look at.
I agree, Your Honor. Let me turn directly to 5.4. 5.4 provides for a provision of forecasts, looks like 2 6-month forecasts, and purchase orders based on the forecasts. In other words, the purchase orders follow the forecasts. It's undisputed that a forecast is unenforceable. In other words, a forecast is a forecast. One could forecast no need. It's undisputed that one could forecast no need. In addition, under the circumstances in the contract, it expressly states at 6.2 that any purchase order can be canceled after it's issued. Purchase order can be canceled after it's issued. So it doesn't follow that there would be a requirement to issue purchase orders with a specific number of products, and it would be an actionable breach if they didn't, if there's a provision in the contract that says that those orders may be expressly canceled. So the point that Medtronic makes in the case is this provision is not ambiguous, and it's never been argued that it's ambiguous, and the court didn't find it's ambiguous. It provides for the provision of forecasts and follow-up purchase orders. But again, if there is no need, there is no need for a product in a forecast, then there would be no requirement for a purchase order. It's axiomatic. The question then becomes, well, is there a requirement for a forecast, or what is the consequence of the lack of provision of a forecast? The forecast provision is in the supplier performance section of the contract, not the buyer performance section. Again, forecasts by definition do not require a purchase. What's the purpose of a forecast? Well, Odyssey expressly sets forth what the purchase is in paragraph 10 of the complaint, where it says the purpose is to enable supplier to reserve sufficient materials, machinery, and personnel for purchases. In other words, it's a protection for the supplier. If the buyer provides a forecast of 100 units and subsequently orders 1,000, the supplier has a defense to the provision of 1,000 and the ability to say that they didn't breach the contract. As the Alorac case expressly states when it deals specifically with this issue, there is no difference between a forecast that predicts no need and no forecast. In fact, that court went on to say it would be absurd to hold that a buyer breached an agreement because it did not go through the pointless exercise of submitting forecasts when it didn't predict any sales. So in summary, with respect to this issue of 5.4, Your Honor, there is a forecast provision. Based on the record, there was no forecast provided. But there cannot be a breach under these circumstances by not providing a forecast. And because there was no forecast, and no need predicted, there would have been no requirement to submit purchase orders. So 5.4 standing on its own cannot consist of a breach of contract in this case. What it really comes back to is what the complaint originally pled and what they originally framed their case as. And that was Medtronic failed to purchase a specific amount of product. Because even if the court in some way found that 5.4 had some implication for sending purchase orders, the question would become, what amount would be included in the purchase order? What would you say to the jury as a required amount for the purchase order? Well, there's only three arguments in this case. There was only one argument in the complaint. The one argument in the complaint was the note that the court has already addressed and that counsel has already said does not in itself provide a purchase obligation. There's only two other arguments. The first argument was raised in the reply at the district court level. And that is that because Medtronic did in fact send purchase orders during this relationship, it was somehow obligated to send more purchase orders. There's no basis in fact or law for that argument. These purchase orders were not foreign documents attached to the contract. These were simply Medtronic's purchase orders that were submitted after the fact. So there's absolutely no factual or legal basis for that argument creating a quantity requirement. There is one last argument that there was a quantity requirement in this contract. That was raised during oral argument at the district court level. And that's 5.1 of the contract, which expressly deals with on-time delivery. On-time delivery. And all that provision says is, here are the reasons or the circumstances that you'll have an on-time delivery. Now, what Odyssey does is it points to two words in that paragraph, maximum and minimum, and says, ah, maximum, minimum, that must mean there must be a quantity requirement. However, a clear reading of that paragraph suggests that that maximum and minimum refers to what's called SMI, which is a supplier managed inventory program, which doesn't exist in this case. But had there been a supplier managed inventory program, then there are certain maximum and minimum quantities that Medtronic itself can set. So under no circumstances does 5.1 set that requirement. And I note that based on counsel's oral comments, all he stated was what's in the complaint, which is the note, which does not, as he now concedes, create an independent requirement. So again, in summary, even if one were to look at 5.4 and say, well, isn't there some question of whether 5.4 actually requires you to submit purchase orders? We suggest it does not, based on my comments earlier. Even if one suggested that, there would be no quantity requirement. And because there's no quantity requirement, under the cases that we cited, Reese's, Carter, and Modern Systems, there cannot be a breach. As a matter of law, there cannot be a breach.
Mr. Marshall, I'd like to go back to, 5.4, I believe, is the basis of count two and count three. In count two, I'm wondering whether your oral argument is different from what you've briefed. I'm looking at page 14 of your brief. It seems that you say, assuming it's true that forecasts were not provided, the complaint fails to state a claim because it does not allege a causal link between the alleged breach and any damages. Is that the sole argument that you're making in response to count two, or do you have an additional argument?
Well, I think that's the argument I think that the court set forth, or the conclusion that the court set forth, is that there was no causal nexus between a breach and damages. And I'm suggesting the same thing, only I think I'm arguing in a broader sense. What I'm saying is that there cannot be a breach by the failure to submit a forecast. I think that's in essence saying the same thing.
Well, I mean, if Medtronic did not submit a forecast and then Medtronic subsequently submitted purchase orders that were not forecasted previously, wouldn't that be breach, or wouldn't that at least state a claim for a breach?
I suspect what that would do is give Odyssey the ability to claim that it did not breach if the purchase order exceeded the amount of forecast. That's the point of the forecast. And that's exactly what Odyssey says at paragraph 10 of its complaint. It is simply an ability for Odyssey to say, you can't, in essence, order more than has been forecasted, or at least you can't claim that we didn't comply with the contract if you do so, because the forecast is intended to enable us to assemble the resources to respond to the forecast.
I guess, I think what you just said is that they could assert your breach as a defense to any claim made by Medtronic that they had breached.
Exactly. It would not be an affirmative claim by Odyssey. It would be a defense to Medtronic saying, hey, we just ordered 1,000 units and you didn't provide it. Odyssey could come back and say, well, you only forecasted 100. Therefore, we didn't breach. That's the point of the forecast provision in Odyssey's words at paragraph 10. Now, there was no mention in counsel's comments about the contract claim in count one. That's the contract claim based on 6.1, which is the term provision. Obviously, there is no language in the term provision that requires any amount of product at all. And so as a result, it can't sustain a breach of contract claim. We've talked about counts two and three, which are the forecast and purchase order claims.
Could I go back to count three now, I guess? Are you accepting for purposes of this motion that 5.4 required Medtronic to provide forecasts that were accompanied by firm purchase orders?
No. No, I suggest that this provision has a framework for forecasts and purchase orders. And I'm suggesting that not providing a forecast is not and cannot be a breach of this provision for the reasons that I've suggested, that there is no qualitative difference between the failure to submit a forecast and submitting a forecast of no need. So it cannot be a breach of the agreement as a matter of law.
Forgive me if I missed this, you know, your statement about this earlier. But Mr. Bradford, I think, interprets it in the way I just stated, based on the word with firm purchase orders, that with indicates that the firm purchase orders must go along with the forecast. I think that was his argument, but do you disagree with his interpretation of paragraph, with that interpretation of that clause of 5.4?
I do, because it's a pricing agreement, not a purchase agreement. And that provision, along with the other provisions, provides the framework for how it's going to work when Medtronic chooses to purchase. And again, if the assumption is that there can't be a breach by not providing a forecast, and if the assumption is that not providing a forecast is in essence a zero need forecast, then there can't be a requirement to provide a purchase order for no product. It doesn't work. It doesn't follow.
How do we know that there were no purchase orders? How do we know that? Based on the complaint, which is, I think, the sole record, how do we know whether or not there were any purchase orders that were not forecasted?
There is nothing in the record and no allegation by Odyssey of that, not at all. That's not part of this case. The second part of the answer that I was giving, Judge, is that 5.4 doesn't provide the requirements that are suggested by counsel. But even if it did, there's a second part, as counsel identified, that they have to get to prevail in this appeal. And that is, what's the quantity requirement? Because to say, well, there was a requirement of submitting a purchase order begs the question, well, what would be in the purchase order? Zero? One? 50? 100? How would the jury make that determination? Because unless this court finds that the lower court erred in finding there was no purchase requirement, then there is no reason to remand on this topic at all, because there would be nothing further to decide on that issue. Your Honor, I went back to count one. I see my time is ending, so I'll just speak very quickly about the bad faith claim. The bad faith claim in sum and substance is that Medtronic acted in bad faith because it negotiated with another supplier. And as we set forth, the law is very clear that one can't be held in bad faith for exercising rights that are in the contract itself. And here at 6.2, there's an express right for Medtronic to use a different vendor. And so therefore, negotiating with a different vendor can't be a basis for bad faith. And finally, on the promissory estoppel claim, there's a contract here, which means promissory estoppel can't apply. And there is certainly no clear and definite promise. That promise alleged to be that they'd continue to work in their long-term successful business relationship. There's certainly no basis to enforce that alleged promise. I see my time has run out.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Bradford, we're ready for your rebuttal argument.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a couple points. Number one, my friend on the other side repeatedly referred to the title of the document as a pricing agreement, and in part it is. But the party's obligations are not determined by the title of the document. They're determined by the substance of the document. And our claim is not that they breached the title, it's that they breached paragraph 5.4. You also heard an emphasis on the fact that paragraph 5.4 appears in the section of the contract called supplier performance. Medtronic drafted this contract. It put its obligation in paragraph 5.4. It can't put its obligation under supplier performance and then, when it's called to task for not complying with its obligation, say, we're really not obligated to do anything because we put it under supplier performance, not buyer performance. The first two words of section 5.4 say, Medtronic shall. That is a buyer requirement, not a supplier requirement. Third, You heard the argument today that really 5.4 can't be interpreted as requiring Medtronic to purchase anything because paragraph 6.2 says Medtronic can cancel any orders in its discretion as it deems fit. That is the complete opposite of the argument that was made in Medtronic's response brief. And I'm quoting from page 18, right in the middle of the page. A firm purchase order is simply a purchase order that cannot be canceled. So all counsel did today is identify another ambiguity in the contract as to what firm purchase order means. If it can't be canceled, clause 6.2 would be superfluous. If it can be canceled, what does firm purchase order mean? These are all questions that need to be resolved on remand with discovery. You also heard Mr. Marshall's interpretation of what paragraph 5.4 means. That isn't based on the plain language of the contract. It's based on essentially what he believes the parties intended 5.4 to do, which is to be a protection for Odyssey and not really a requirement for Medtronic. I think the word was, you can use our breach as a defense, but not as an affirmative claim. That appears nowhere in the contract. And that type of interpretation should come from the witnesses and not by the lawyers in the case. And then lastly, this notion that there can be no damages for breach of a forecast provision. The only cited authority for that is the Ellerac decision out of the Northern District of Illinois, which is a federal case. And most notably, that case was resolved on summary judgment after the plaintiff had every opportunity to marshal evidence in support of its damages claim. That highlights the problem we have here. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you to the attorneys for your briefing and your argument this morning. The case is submitted. You'll have our decision within 90 days as required by statute.